Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
All right, this is exciting. This is exciting stuff. First of all, and then do you want to be a part of this where we say and tell people they need to download, subscribe, rate, review the pod? This is Bo Rude, by the way.
Nick, thanks for having me.
Yeah. You need to go download, subscribe, rate, review to the Nick Bob Podcast. It all helps. First one, dude. First recap pod. We're off and running here.
A reaction pod.
The reaction pod.
Everybody in the state of Nebraska right now needs this. They got lots of feelings.
Yes. I would say Nebraska's horrible. The hype was bad. No. I think it's fair. I want to start with this. So Nebraska wins 35-21. I think it's fair to say everyone was probably disappointed yesterday. But at the same time, that doesn't mean all is lost, all the hype was bullshit, it's time to freak out or anything like that. Like, I think those two things can be true at the same time, you know?
Yeah, the hype, we talked on the last episode about how the hype sort of picked up steam over the summer, right?
Yeah.
The national media started picking us, and I think we have all bought into the hype.
Oh, yeah.
And then the thing that we were so confident of is our quarterback and the offense, and it sort of was a little deflating, right?
Right.
We felt a little deflated. You could feel it in the stadium. The crowd came out after the game, and they were just, it was a little bit, let down.
Yeah.
But I don't think that the season is not like there's not optimism because we won the game and played bad, and the guy that's probably our best player didn't have a good game for him at all. And so we have a great opportunity, I think, to build off of this before Colorado. So
yeah. Before we get into the nuts and bolts of the game, I think it's always weird when what you think's going to happen doesn't happen from the standpoint of everywhere people thought Nebraska was going to be really good, they kind of weren't. And everywhere that they thought Nebraska was maybe going to struggle, they excelled. And so sometimes you set an expectation of something in your mind, individually, collectively, and if it doesn't follow that script, you get like, whoa, you know? I mean, if you'd have told me before the game, one side of the ball is going to carry the game and win the game and all this stuff, I mean, you'd have bet $1 billion it had been the offense, but it was the other way around. So that, I think that's the other thing with it too, is like what you conjured up in your mind with this team and for the game didn't play out.
Yeah. And I don't know. Tell me your thoughts on this. Did you feel like they were letting it all hang out, or did it feel like it was, we're only showing? Like, was there some holdback on play calling?
Well, let's start.
Offense?
That's the perfect shelve that, because I want to get squeeze this in real quick. I want to get into it, because I want to ask you that on, because I don't know if sometimes people from the outside in, like the talking point for every, whenever you play a gimme game in your first game, one of the talking points is, were they vanilla? Were they showing anything?
Yep.
What was happening? But I want to go back to either the first or second drive of the game for South Alabama. If number 8, Deontay Williams, if he doesn't get the late hit on third down, they're off the field.
Yep.
They get the late hit that keeps South Alabama on the field. And then on the touchdown, Deontay Williams has the quarterback dead to rights in the backfield. He whiffs and the quarterback scores.
Yep.
I think sometimes games are more fragile than you think. Like, I wonder if that late hit doesn't happen, or if Deontay Williams sticks the quarterback and they don't score, maybe the game kind of flows a little bit different. But that I felt like early in the game, that felt like one of those, like, those are plays that kind of flip the game.
Yeah, a game can flip on literally one play to, you know, that can change everything, where that could have been a blowout. In the second half, it could have been, you know, we could have scored 50, you know, 50
in a row. Because the first offensive drive was really good for Nebraska.
And it just so, but then, you know, South Alabama did a good job. They made the plays to stick around and give themselves a chance.
Right.
So you got to give them some credit. But yeah, I think we just never, we never really caught that, you know, that first game momentum, where when you're playing a team you should beat, if the momentum goes your way right away, sometimes the game's over after two or three series, right? You score three times, the game's over. That didn't really happen for us. We scored once, but they hung around. They got that touchdown the first half, and it's sort of like, it was like we couldn't get away.
I always felt like, and I don't know how you felt on the football field. I mean, we played football growing up, but so I know this was how we approached it at Southeast and whatnot. I always think when you're playing the teams you're supposed to beat, you take hope away right away. Like, I'm really big on, like, you go out there and kick, like, you punch them in the mouth right away.
And it's over.
And it's over. Like, if Nebraska would have gone out, they scored on the first drive, and then you just, you know, put the hammer down right away. Now all of a sudden, any semblance of hope that they had is gone.
That was Nebraska's signature in the 90s, and we, you know, as Nebraska fans, yes, we'd go there as kids, and it was a like standard life where it's like you go for a quarter, the game's over, and then you're like, you're thinking about what am I gonna eat at halftime in the parking lot, because you go out the parking lot and you go to the best tailgate, who's got the best snacks? Because that was part of the experience, was like, you almost never were playing a full game. And that's the thing that, you know, they're not there yet, where they're taking people's heart in the first three series, where these teams come in, they go, we can't win this game now.
Right.
And that's where I think they, you know, they just, like I said, they let South Alabama hang around. And you saw that sideline. They kept going, and they were getting fired up, and they felt like they had a chance to steal one, and that's the part that, you know.
Right. Okay. We'll get to the good and all that stuff, but let's start with the offensive side of the ball, because obviously that was the big head scratcher. I mean, even Frost said after the game that was the most anemic offensive performance he'd been a part of in a long, long time.
Anemic was a good word. I used the word anemic. I was like, aha.
Like that, Frost. I like
it. He went to the dictionary. He's like, what's the word for bad?
In the second half, by the way, he took off the long sleeve and went with the, I mean, dude is just jacked.
I mean, Nick, are you looking at his biceps?
I like Scott Frost's body is what I'm trying to say.
You've made two.
All right, any questions for Coach? Hi,
Nick again.
Hi, Scott. Nick Bob from the Nick Bob Podcast. Your bod is nice.
What do you do for workouts, Scott?
Curls? Are you a hammer curl guy? Do you superset with some triceps? What do you do?
Does the fact that our coach is he's more buff than our coaches, that makes you happy, doesn't it?
It does. It really does.
It makes you feel like...
It kind of does. But in the second half, when he came out, I was like, nice, Scott! I like it! I figured, I was like, dude is going to get hot. He was muy caliente.
Oh, my God.
I'm just saying what everybody else is thinking. Scott Frost has a nice body. I mean, what's wrong with that, all right? What's wrong with that, all right? Come on, that's just football talk. That's just guy talk,
This
right?
is just guy talk, right? Right?
Oh, get another six beers and let's talk about Frost biceps. Okay, sorry.
Nick, you need a morning whiskey.
Oh, God. Okay. Instant. That was bad. All right, we're like 8 minutes into the pod and we haven't gone anywhere. Okay. Well, okay, so let's go back to what you said first, because that was one of the things everybody talked about. Were they, you tell me, you play, like, were they vanilla? Did you get the sense they were holding things back? Because that did feel like an unimaginative offensive plan.
You know, I think there's that fine line between, it's the first game, we want to be conservative for the sake of the players, and
the next game,
you're not looking ahead to the next game. But I think it's fair to say, coaches, if they feel like we should win this game and the next game, like, there's going to be some of that, let's not show everything. I always attribute it to, are you seeing a lot of gadget plays?
Mm-hmm.
We saw no gadget plays.
Zero.
I think zero gadget trick, sort of really like a, we schemed something special for this team. We saw zero of that, and that's okay. I think there was, and there's also, let's just let everybody get comfortable, run the simple things to, you know, try to avoid turnovers potentially. Like, let's just do things that we can do, and we'll build on that. I think there's sort of a little bit of both, but the zero gadget plays tell me we're holding some things back. And that's okay. I don't think that's a bad thing, as long as you win the game, and they won the game. So in the end, it's okay. We didn't play our best. Sometimes those type of gadget things can help you, you know, spark a drive or get a score. So that was a big, I kind of noticed, like, ooh, no, zero gadgets almost the whole game.
Not even, and when you say gadget plays, not even talking about like double reverse flea foot, just anything that seemed exotic or elaborate.
Yes.
Saw none of that.
It was so vanilla of like inside zone read, outside zone read, and just, and not even as many bubbles as we normally throw. And just, you know, no deep. We didn't take a shot down the field.
Even, I mean, the seam route to Stoll on the long, on the first drive, that was a deep ball, but it wasn't really a deep ball. It was more of a lot of yak after. Yeah. I mean, it was more, he caught it like, what, 10 yards down the field?
Yeah, and then, that was just a little, you know, like a play action, quick hit to the tight end. That was probably the most gadgety play that they had.
They didn't take a shot down the field. Let me ask you a stupid question, but it's like, did you, obviously being a linebacker, when you're getting ready to now play a team, because I want you to flip it and be like, you're a Colorado linebacker.
Okay.
Do you, when you're getting ready to play a team like Nebraska, how hard is it when you feel like, damn, they didn't, they didn't show much? So
Colorado will be, they're going to watch this, you know, the film from this first game a ton, because that's this year's game. But other than that, they're going back to last year. And so everything that they're going to watch their, you know, they're going to have their four game breakdown basically from last year plus this year's. And, you know, it makes a difference. It's different personnel. And it's, you know, it's a more mature team. So really, you're going to base a lot of what they're doing off of from what we called last year. So for Frost, I think that's an advantage they have right now, is they didn't come out and show everything they got. So if we play Colorado game one and somebody else game two, we're probably showing more and doing more. There's probably more gadgets.
Has to be.
I guarantee it. And so they would have probably seen more. And so, yeah.
It's hard to get a sense of the offense from that standpoint on, okay, were they going two pages deep into their playbook? Like, basically not at all. And then the other thing is the high snaps, where even the one that went way over Martinez's head, I mean, ultimately Juergens got benched in the second half, and Will Farniok came in and was the center. The high snaps, I don't think, especially in this offense, as a quarterback, you have so many things you're thinking about. And if you are having to think about catching the snap, that's enough to throw you off. And football is a timing sport.
That's what I was going to say. So like, as a former quarterback, the timing of it, right? Like, you speak to that. Speak to the timing of you're trying to get things at a certain pace.
And that can be run plays. It can be pass plays. And even just that half a second of Martinez having to jump up and catch it, I know that sounds crazy. That can kill a play.
Well, the holes open up for how long, right?
In a split second, and even passing holes. Yep. So you're trying to hit someone when they clear a backer. That half a second is enough for you to miss a guy or to throw your thought process
and your rhythm.
Yes.
I mean, that's a good point. You're scrambling then mentally just to get back to like, okay, what am I thinking?
Where am I going?
About?
Because I know look at me. This is like Uncle Rico's like, when we played North Platte, I knew that DN was coming. But there are things as a quarterback, you have one guy that you're really reading. You know, it could be an outside backer, a safety, and you want to have a quick eye on him.
Yep.
And when your eye has to go up to the ball and down, that's enough for you to lose where the guy you're reading for, maybe your first read or whatever, is off, and then you start, then you're just playing from behind.
It probably speeds you up. It speeds your footwork up, and that sort of whatever it is that as a quarterback, I'm assuming if you're more relaxed and you're set and throw versus you jump, scramble, sort of like get back to, then you're trying to kind of gather yourself. Then, like I say, everything speeds up and it's just so much harder to make a throw or, like I said, to the timing of a run of right. a run play.
And so, you know, with, because I think the high snaps thing, that's something that has to get fixed. I mean, that's a big problem.
Yeah.
And because that'll, I want to get into Martinez for a second because that was, I'm telling you, and I mean this in all sincerity, watching Adrian Martinez play yesterday, I was half expecting and kind of hoping after the game for Scott Frost to go to the podium and say, Martinez has had the flu for the past 2 days, or Martinez has a stomach, but like he didn't look right. He didn't look like he had the same. He looked stuck in the mud mentally and physically. And I don't know if it was the high snaps just got him out of sorts, but I just, it's interesting that he never once looked like that last year. Not one time.
Running and throwing. He
everything.
Just, yeah.
And I don't, I mean, again, I don't want to, like Frost said after the game, he said, the one, look at my biceps. And I said, I will, sir. No, he said,
Nick's
the like, one.
Nick says, what'd you say, sir? I was distracted.
Sorry, excuse me. Are you worried about your biceps? I mean, Martinez, he said, the one guy I'm not worried about is Martinez. And let's make that clear on this podcast. I'm not worried about Adrian Martinez.
No.
But with that said, it was kind of like, what was that? But at the same time, like, nobody's perfect. Like, he hasn't really had a bad game yet.
No, and he, did you see his post-game, his interview after the game?
I saw some quotes. I didn't see it.
He went up there and he owned it. He said, I played bad. You know, he was very upfront with that was a bad performance by him, and it's on him to fix it, and there's no, so he did a great job of
owning it, not running from it, not making excuses.
He owned it. Without any excuses attached to it. So that's a good sign that he's down on himself. After a win, he's pissed off that he didn't play well. And that's what you want out of your leader and your best player.
Yeah.
Is that, hey, it doesn't matter. We won and I'm not even worried about it. Like he's pissed off at himself.
Right.
He's not happy. And that's a good sign because he is a better player. And I have a lot of confidence that he will play better. But it's good to see a guy that's very aware of, hey, this isn't something to take lightly. Like I need to change this and change it in a hurry.
I wonder if sometimes ignorance is bliss as a player, and a free mind, for whatever reason, is a good thing. And what I hope you don't have with Martinez is like, I think there had to have been an element last year where he was just balling. Like, he just went out there. There was only so much of the playbook he could learn. There was only so much of reads and different things he could learn. There were probably only so much freedom he had for audibling or whatever.
Yeah.
And he was kind of out there just playing. And so what I hope, there's a balance, right? Like, you want to have information, but there's a fine line between having information and being prepared and having too much information. I just hope that there hasn't been, because sometimes you can spend too much time on studying and not just realize like, hey man, a lot of it is just a rhythm and a flow and confidence and instincts.
Yep.
So I just hope, I mean, again, he's going to be fine, but I didn't see a guy, even as everything about him looked different. Like, I thought his demeanor looked different. Everything looked different. And it's very interesting on what to attribute that to.
That's tough. And we won't know till we see him play, you know, Colorado, which is going to be a better team, and it's going to be a bigger game. And will he rise to the occasion? But it could just be he couldn't find a rhythm.
Right.
As a court, it's such a rhythm position,
totally.
I think. And, you know, for him, I think that's what I saw. He couldn't find a rhythm. The question is that going to be a trend or is that a one-off?
Right? I think it's more of a one-off.
I would agree.
To that point, the one thing people have to think about too is Martinez couldn't find a rhythm in the offense. The offense could never get into a rhythm. And the thing that really also hurt that was the way the second half started for the offense to be able to find a rhythm. They have a pick six, a punt return for a touchdown, and a muffed punt.
Yep.
So I bet an hour of real time elapsed between their last possession of the second quarter to their first possession of the third quarter. So, like, you're trying to find this rhythm, and you just sit for an eternity.
Yeah, you go down. I mean, it's like you need to, like, call in the you know, the trainer and be like, will you get my hammies here?
I mean,
you know,
seriously, you got to get loose. You got to. I mean, that can be hard. Like, don't get me wrong. It was great that they had a pick six. And I'm not saying that. I'm saying from just the standpoint of finding rhythm.
When are the times an offense is in the most rhythm, right? Usually when they have the ball the whole time. So when you see time of possession and they are controlling the game,
right,
that's when the offense is in full rhythm. When they don't have the ball, then all of a sudden you got to go out there and, like, say, and then you have a quick three and out, which they did. And then you're like, we're feeling like
totally out of
cold.
This will be like rose colored glass half full, make excuses for the offense. Let's think about this for a second. Let's just think that, because they, like you said, there wasn't a lot of gadget trickery, elaborate, imaginative play calling. So kind of vanilla play calling. First time center in Cam Jurgens.
Yep.
Snaps were high. They changed centers at halftime. They changed running backs at halftime.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the first game of the year.
Yep.
Like, that's a lot of different things that are working against you to get into a rhythm.
So the number one thing for rhythm to me in this offense, and I wrote this down, I heard Scott Frost say this, but the inability to run the ball on first down in this offense, I think that's the rhythm starter. If they can run the ball, then all of a sudden people are they're still down the box, and then we can play action, we can throw, and it gets them moving, and it gives them options to call better plays.
Right.
When they can't run the ball on first down, which they could not run the ball on first down.
No,
that whole
game, at all.
They couldn't get 3, 4, 5 yards of crack. It was either losing yards or stuffed at the line. Then all of a sudden, that second down in 8, 9, 10, 11, that's a hard play call for a coach.
Mm-hmm.
And we couldn't get out of our own way then from there. So it seemed like
the lack of success on first down.
That to me was, when you're right, talking about rhythm, that was
especially
point
this
A,
offense,
point B,
that's
point
where
C.
The tempo, I've always felt like watching the Oregon teams play and the Central Florida teams play and even Frost teams last year, it's not only is it success on first down, but sometimes it's getting that first down of a drive.
Exactly. Like
that. Then that's when the tempo really sinks its teeth into you. You know, first down, 9-yard run, second down, second and one, boom. You know, now you're like, then it really, it just never felt like they could get it humming yesterday.
Yes. It's that offense
Saturday, we should say, because people might be listening to this on Monday.
Yeah. So that whole offense is based, it is a rhythm, it's speed, it's tempo. And that first down and that first, like, you know, four down series of getting the first down. Like,
right,
those two things are so huge. Not that they're not important in other offenses, but they're critical for this specific offense.
Totally. With all that said, as we now dump the glass out and it's just empty. With all that said, there is glasses dumped. With all that said, there is the ultimate cover up for all the shit we just said is offensive line, lineup, win. And that is something that, of all the things that concern me, it's not like Martinez all of a sudden is like Austin Powers, like, Crikey, I lost my mojo. You know, it's not like before the game he's like, Crikey, I can't play.
I've lost, you know, Crikey. No, Crikey's Australian.
Oh, did he say Crikey?
He does say, no, just say Crikey.
I think he said Crikey. I think Austin Powers said, Crikey, I lost my mojo.
Does he say Crikey?
I don't know. We'll get an answer to that via Twitter from someone.
I don't think he said Crikey. He definitely lost his mojo.
He lost his mojo.
And so he had to find his mojo.
Yes, it wasn't like I was in Martinez. But
the life force.
The life force. Yes, he didn't lose that.
Dr.
The
Evil.
Thing that concerns me was they're just, when that ball was snapped, South Alabama was winning. Their D-line was winning at the point of attack.
Yeah.
But the thing that's weird about football is, and I wish I had a more recent example, but I always think, like, how does it make sense that, remember the last year of Riley, 2017, Wisconsin at home. In the first half, they ran for like 180 yards on Wisconsin.
Yep.
But earlier in the year against Northern Illinois, they couldn't run the ball at all. So I guess my point is sometimes football's weird where like, and I don't know if it's a scheme thing for what something that a defense is doing or what, like that some, there are some days you're like, can't dream of running the ball. And then there's other days you can, and it's kind of a weird deal. But with all that said, like that of all the things that happened yesterday, the offensive line's inability to control the trenches concerns me the most.
So your thought is almost, how come you can't just dominate a South Alabama?
If we're talking about, let's just say, we should be able
to run the ball no matter what, right?
If we're truthfully talking about a team that could win 8, 9, 10 games and could be in Indianapolis winning the West playing for a Big Ten title, I don't want to say dominating South Alabama running the ball, but like you should be able to win that battle more often than not.
I mean, to remember the end game stats for how many yards we had, but it
Nebraska ran for 98 yards, 2.2 yards per carry.
Yeah.
That's really bad. Against a team that last year, a screenshot of this, last year they ranked 101st against the run in the country. Guys, that's a bad, like, they didn't look like their personnel didn't look horrible to me.
They didn't look bad.
But on paper, projecting into a year, that's a bad team.
I think we were calling them JV State.
Oh, we
or
were. Oh, well, yeah.
They didn't look like that at all. As bad as I think that.
So
that
I guess
they
for me, that's the thing of all the things to be concerned about. The O-line is still a concern.
I'm not quite as concerned just because to me, I did see an aspect of they were playing the run hard. They had guys down the box and they were just going for it to me. It looked like they were going for the, like they were shooting the gaps. They were saying, throw the ball down the field. And
maybe Nebraska didn't want to do that for whatever reason.
We didn't throw the ball down the field at all.
Right.
And so to me, I'm not quite as, I didn't feel like they just couldn't block anybody, but a lot of it to me could have been South Alabama just, they were kind of just saying, we're going for it, and you're going to have to do something to beat us, and we didn't do those things.
I might be forgetting, but I mean, so Nebraska had 44 rushing attempts. I can't remember one that was well blocked. I'm really trying to think. Right. I mean, and I'm just trying to be, I mean, again, I still am not ready. Like I said at the start of this podcast, like I am not ready to, this team could still absolutely make some noise, win the West. Absolutely. I mean, everybody needs to relax. I mean, you watch Northern Iowa and Iowa State yesterday, triple overtime. You watch Georgia State beat Tennessee at Tennessee. Like, winning's, unless you're like Clemson, Bama, like, winning's hard anymore. It really is. But I just, on 44 rushing attempts, I never felt like there was a play where there was a lot of room.
No,
there was
not much room.
Right.
The positives from this is we won the game and
totally.
And if we can win next week, this game is one of those that you won't remember in 1 year. You will not remember this game. It's going to be just. It's almost, not to make it insignificant, but it's closer to like a preseason game.
Totally.
Because it is like, it's some it, sort of, it's almost
the
a
bottom
warm-up.
Line is they're 1-0.
They're 1-0. It's on the schedule.
And I'm not sure, for as much as people watched this game and thought, I'm not sure this was a game that Nebraska would have won last year. Or would have won, like for the last 3-4 years, I'm not sure if Nebraska wins that game.
Because
I'm really not sure.
Would we have gotten those takeaways last year? In the
I don't think so.
So we don't get those three touchdowns, and they're in the game in the second half. And I'll tell you
so
what.
So a part of the deal
we've lost
is
those games.
A part of, I do believe in the skill, and it's you got to acquire, like finding a way to win is a real thing. And sometimes it's not always going to be exactly how you expect it to be. Yeah. And there were numerous times last year where the offense carried the flag for the day, and the defense and special teams really struggled, and it just was flipped. You know, that's why football, it's like football is the ultimate team game. Not only do all it takes is one guy fucking up and it ruins it, but also sometimes all it takes is one phase you know, special teams like to not show up. And it's, you know, that's why you got to have all three phases and all that show up. And so with all that said, they won the game. They won the game and did what they needed to do. Right?
They're in the W column, and we're on to the game
that really matters.
That is going to shape this season.
Right. So before we get to the defense, real quick, Wandell. I mean, Wandell Robinson, you can see it. Like, you can see
he's
got
not,
something.
It's not false advertising. No. He's that good.
Yes.
He's a freshman who took about 20 touches and looked awesome.
It's telling, especially, like, I don't think people understand how hard it is to play as a freshman in high-level Division I football. And not only is he playing, he got the first carry of the game. He was on kickoff return. Like you said, I don't know what his touches count ended up being, but it was a ton. It was clearly. So he's a freshman, and he's so good that it almost felt like a lot of the offensive plan was to get him the ball as much as possible.
I don't know that he, I mean, besides Martinez, who's our quarterback, the non-quarterback skill positions, it's going to be a toss-up who's the best play. It's probably him or Maurice Washington. Mm-hmm. And Maurice looked fast.
Yeah.
He looked faster than last year. I don't know that he's that much bigger, but he looks a little bit bigger.
If anything, I mean, I thought he looked tiny to me, but he looked
fast.
But last
year he was like...
Oh, he was, yeah.
He had been, on the...
The straw diet.
He'd been on the straw diet. Eating straw and air. But he looked faster to me than he even did last year.
He's got a gear.
So, I mean, my thought is, if you can get those two guys on the field together, and especially in that shotgun, those plays where you can hand it either or, that's kind of scary for a defense because those guys can both run so well.
Right.
And they just they're fast and they're really elusive runners. But to go back, I don't know that Wandell's not the best offensive weapon yet because he can really run routes as like a true wide receiver, or you can hand the ball to him. So, I mean, he's still young and he's going to get better, but I was very impressed with just his sort of, he looks comfortable with the ball in his hands.
I just think, and again, like I said, I think it's telling that they clearly wanted to get him the rock. Like, that tells you that dude is that good.
First game of the year and you have a true freshman and you're like, so we didn't get him enough touches. So he probably touched the ball 20 times and they said we wanted to get him the ball more. That's telling how good they think he
is. What, almost like when our, the jury has not reached a verdict yet on Dedrick Mills. Like, I don't know what to... Yesterday was so hard because there wasn't a lot of real estate to run. Yeah. It just kind of like... And I think he's one of those guys you need to get into your head. He's not a... He's a downhill power back. He's not really a make-you-miss home run guy. At least that's how it appears to me.
He's only been on campus for 2 months.
Yeah, ish.
He's new to this offense. He's got some room to grow with experience.
Right.
But I don't think they need him to be anything more than a poor man's Divine Ozigbo.
Yes.
Because we got Washington and we have Wandale. Those two guys are our explosive guys. And I think as long as we can find somebody to run through the tackles hard.
And I think that's what he is.
That inside zone's a big part of this offense. He needs to be one of our primary guys that we can hand the ball and he can churn out yards for us. He doesn't need to be the game breaker necessarily, but we need a solid guy. You know, he's one of our bigger backs too.
Yes.
I mean, Wandale,
and everybody talks about, like, Mo Berry was like after Pratt, like, he goes, that guy wants to run you over.
Yeah. So I think that you got to give him a little leeway. He's been on campus for 2 months. He knows this offense worse than the freshman Wandale does. Wandale's been here since January. So I think there needs to be a little bit of a buffer for, like, this guy needs to have a little time.
Who's for you? Was it harder to go against the bigger, beefy guys or like the Wandale, Washington, the shifty dudes as a linebacker?
I think the easiest was, I felt like the guys that were average size, the really small, quick, or the really big guys were the harder ones.
The extremes
of each. The extremes are harder. The guys that are sort of 6 foot, 200 pounds, you're like, great. is his name John Doe? That would help.
First running back, we got to talk about Doe. John Doe.
Number 22,
just
John Doe.
Just average guy. He's going to run at you.
What's the most average number we can get? 22? Okay, good. 22. John Doe. He's from Peoria, Illinois, right in the middle of the country. And
we have some information on him, right? His favorite ice cream, vanilla.
Vanilla,
that's
okay.
His favorite ice cream. He really likes vanilla.
Color's blue. He likes blue.
He loves blue. His favorite band, the Beatles. That's John Doe. That's what we know about him. All right? We got to get ready to go against him. That's what we're doing against John Doe. All right?
He,
Okay, good God. But so you with me on Mills, it's like, I think it's hard. Yesterday was so hard to tell with him because he just.
It's the first game. Like,
first game.
We have to, there's more. Almost with every single player on this team, nobody showed extremes. They're the best or they're the worst. We didn't see anybody's, any colors from anybody that I would say was really right. Changed our mind on how we see people. So
totally.
I think. We know that this is the first game and there's going to be really the story has not been told on anybody yet. We don't know the answer on any of these guys that would, you know, disprove kind of what we already think of them.
So defensively. No, I mean, we've spent 40 minutes talking about all the issues with the offense, but I think like you could make a case that what everyone needs to be talking about, what is the fact defense is pretty good yesterday. And going into the season, one of the biggest question marks and even moving forward is like, can this defense, which with largely the same guys, improve and become more disruptive to force turnovers? Because that's something that Chenander has been vocal about and saying that like, basically their number one objective is to force turnovers. Like they're like, when you get the ball back to the offense, when you be disruptive, we're going to be super aggressive. They forced 5 turnovers yesterday, and they were disruptive. Like, I thought, was there one prevailing thing that stood out to you with the defensive performance?
I would say the main takeaway I from the game was, and it might seem obvious, but I think it falls back to comparing to last year. Well, we made plays.
Mm-hmm.
And my point is, last year we had opportunities to make big plays and we never made them. And we made about 5 or 6 game-changing big plays that it's just good to see guys go execute, like go make the play, go take it to the house, don't drop it, don't whiff the sack, don't not jump on the fumble.
Right.
That was the story of last year to me. It was this inability to make
the
play.
To seal
the
deal. Yeah.
Seal the deal. And it might seem so simple, but it's a mindset thing. Going and finishing that, like Cam Taylor is a, and he's going to be a difference maker, obviously, but he's a guy that now we bring in and he's ready to go. And he's flying up there and, you know, and flying through the quarterback to make the hit and cause the fumble to score the touchdown, where there might have been hesitation last year and somebody, you know, whiffs that play. It was amazing how many times I felt like
Lamar Jackson got home.
Yeah, Lamar got home. Cam Taylor took a pick almost back all the way. Eric Lee takes one to the house. I mean, those things.
Eric Lee, what did you get to see? Because you were in the stadium. I don't know if they gave you a great replay. Boy, did he. You talk about he trusted it. He trusted his instincts and just, I mean, it's hard to jump an out from the out. You see, he jumped it on the outside of it. You know what I mean?
He was coming from the safety spot and he took a V-line.
Yes.
And beat the guy on the out cut.
You don't see that very much.
Behind him, not in front of him. He didn't go in front, he went behind.
Go underneath on an out. He read it and trusted his eyes so much and his instincts so much to just right down there, pick, take it to the house. Unbelievable play.
And he's a good example of a guy that he's been here for 5 years and he has never made a play.
Right.
He has yet to make a play, and then all of a sudden he has 2 picks in this game. And you go, if that's not turning a corner to me, like then what is?
Right.
Like if it's, you know, for a guy like him specifically who – he hadn't made a play, and he'd still tell you, like, I've been waiting my whole career for this.
Mm-hmm.
And he finally, so this is good to see these guys, because once you make plays and you know you can, it's going to build and come. So I like, to bring it all back, seeing these guys actually make the play
totally.
is a big step for this defense. So now can you do it on a little bit bigger stage?
Right. Because you were, that was kind of your calling card, I'd say, as a at Nebraska, was you were a guy that made big plays defensively. Was that a mindset? Like, because I've seen every football game I've ever played and played with you. So like you were always had a knack for that.
But that's
like,
it's a mindset. So yeah. Some guys, they don't understand, I think, how to get out of their own way. So there's some guys take the coaching like, well, coach says I got to be here and do it. And they're thinking about all these things that they need to be doing. Like, I got to contain, I got to do this. And they almost will make mistakes by trying to do what their coach says too much, where sometimes you got to know, go get the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Go after, but go rip it out, go take it, go for the pick. Or like, you know, if the guy, if you think, oh, I got to be outside here, instead of being like, I'm just going to go, I can go get that guy right now. And your coach is never going to get mad at you if you go make a play. And right. So when you see guys that just instinctually just say, well, I'm going to go get it, that's a mindset. They got to be comfortable enough to know their scheme and at the same time go make the play.
Right.
And not everybody can do that. Some people almost get in their own way when it comes to get the ball.
Right.
If you can get the ball, like, you're going to win the game.
Because I also think, We go back to the transition that a lot of these guys had to undertake. Diaco's defense was very on your heels, keep everything, almost like don't come downhill and make a play.
No.
And so it's you get drilled. They got drilled every day on playing a certain way with a certain mindset. And sometimes it takes like – it's oftentimes practice is simply about establishing habits. And habits can be tangible, your footwork, your this, your that, whatever, but it also can be intangible in what you're thinking. And the thing that is pretty cool is to try to think about what the defense looked like on Saturday and then contrast it to what it looked like last year of Diaco and then even parts of last year. It's like you can really see the evolution and the growth there.
Yep. I'd say a guy like Jojo Doman, right?
Yeah.
He's an example of somebody that
guy makes plays.
Like he's making plays. So the difference between him and sort of the guys playing his position, I think they're all trying to do their jobs. For whatever reason, Jojo has shown he's got a knack for, I'm gonna go make the play though.
Right.
So he had a three or four times where he's on the edge and instead of being hesitant, well, I'm outside, or I don't know if he had quarterback or running back, but he went and just took down the ball. And guess what? It was, we win, right? And
right.
And that's the stuff that's an aggressive defense. An aggressive defense does that. A defense that might play on their heels more might just be hanging a little bit more on the line, slow playing. And I think if you're going to be an attacking defense, go attack, go blow it up. And seeing him make a few of those plays, in the same way we were blitzing, we had corner blitzes, safety blitzes that got home.
Yeah, Lamar's and Cam.
Yeah, those are DB blitzes that hit home. So I think we are showing some of these guys are attacking, and that is to me that's the sign of an attacking defense.
Right, because I saw this because this would have been you. I saw the ESPN stats and info tweet this out. Nebraska has recorded their third non-offensive touchdown of the game yesterday or on Saturday. It is the first time Nebraska has punched in three non-offensive touchdowns since
2005.
Wake Forest.
Yep.
Because because was that the year that Schick did the whole West Coast defense?
That's where I met Matt Schick. He came and his brilliant idea was because we had the Callahan West Coast offense. So we did a skit almost on the news channel. He was, Channel 7 news.
Yeah. And KTV,
He had this idea. It was called the West Coast defense, where all we did was score touchdowns. And so the playbook, we'd open a playbook and it'd say, score a touchdown. I think we scored four or five touchdowns in the first two or three games.
Yes.
So we did this with Schick, and we met Schick, and you know, he's a hilarious guy.
He had a way of getting people in, like, to buy into stupid stuff like that.
Because he likes like stupid things, Matt Schick's your guy. Because he's going to sell you, here's what I'm thinking. I know you want to be serious, but guess what?
Here's my idea. The reason I brought that up is, like, I would think, just like anything, like, did you guys then that year, like, you start to then have some confidence as collectively as a group, like, we're ball hawks, we're going to, and then the other thing too is, like, you better believe Steven Montez for Colorado, that quarterback, I mean, he like yeah. you're gonna go, now go against a team that just forced five turnovers, had two non-offensive, you know, two touchdowns. Like they're gonna be a little bit more like, oh shit, we got to be ready to rock here.
Yeah, take them a little more seriously.
You know, that's fair. I mean, but I just yeah, that's probably your summation of it is probably true. Like the most pleased the thing that you're probably pleased with the most is was like that dudes just sealed the deal. And made plays.
Make the play. So there's, that's something I'm going to be looking at all season is like where, when there's opportunities, are you actually going to make the play? Because right. that's been it's been an Achilles heel, this inability to make the play, make the big tackle, get the quarterback down when he's scrambling and don't let that drive, that last drive, just stay alive. Right. And then, you know, don't even take the chance of losing the game after that. So we've had too much of that. Where, you know, I think as football fans, we all sit there, and when you miss that play, and you just go, oh, it takes your heart out. Like, you feel that right. knot in your stomach when you're watching the game. You're going, oh, my God, just it's over if we can just get him down, you know?
Right.
And so that's the stuff that I'm hoping we turn the corner on. We're the team that's like, we take your heart. When you give us
right.
when you make a mistake or you give us a chance, we're going to take it, and we're going to end this thing.
Did you feel like the backers played pretty good for the most part?
For the most part, yeah. Yeah, I think D-line, backers, it was pretty solid game.
The secondary were the guys that made the splash. Because I'm looking at the stats. It looked like Mo Berry led the boys in tackles. You know, Mo's always around the ball, and Mo plays hard. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I mean, he's not the most gifted guy in the world. But, like, he had 12 tackles. And then the thing that's good is, it was all, and I don't know, maybe this isn't good. A lot of guys, Mo had 12 tackles. The next highest was Cam with 5. And then it's a bunch of guys with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 8 different dudes had 4 tackles.
Yeah.
So what's good about that probably is like you have a variety of guys making plays.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like sometimes I don't know if, do you look at tackle dispersed, like how that's being
not really.
I mean, like, is there anything to take away with that?
You expect your middle backers to make a lot of tackles. Your safeties are going to make a lot of tackles.
Because they had a lot of guys come in. Eric Lee came in, played well, as we said. Even Sullivan, number 30, dude came in and made a couple of good plays he came in and played well.
I mean,
well.
Where's Sullivan from? I
had to look at he's from Illinois, I think, is what it, I mean, yeah, like, there's guys who are like, where's... Oh.
I didn't know. I thought he was a Nebraska kid, but that's, yeah, he's a guy that came out of nowhere. I didn't know he existed, and all of a sudden he's playing real minutes.
Right. It's great. I mean, it's great. I just think you think about yesterday or Saturday, and last year special teams really not very good at all. There were moments last year where the defense struggled a bit last year and really had problems making plays. Mm-hmm. Those are two of the bigger prevailing question marks that, like, you would give Nebraska. Now, I know Spielman muffed the one punt, but he returned a punt for a touchdown. Yeah. And for the most part, special teams played really
well.
Even. Call it even, Steven. And even, like, Barrett Pickering didn't play. Their starting kicker got held out. Like, I thought special teams did pretty well as well. So the two areas that you felt like, boy, Nebraska got a ways to go, like, pretty good on Saturday.
Yeah, I don't know that we learned. I think we can be happy about the defense. I don't know that we've learned who we are yet, right. though. So that's a good sign. But I think this Colorado game is going to be the game where we have a better understanding of, like, what are we really?
Right.
Because I don't think South Alabama and that performance is really indicative of, like, what we are. That's sort of like, it was good to see. It's good to see the growth, but we don't know yet. So, offensively or defensively, right. I don't think we know yet.
So what, going on the road, tough environment. What was the toughest environment you ever played in?
Toughest environment.
I feel like that has to affect the offense more too on the road in football. You know, because like defense, or what do you think?
Offense harder here.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking back to Texas A&M.
USC, Texas. Was USC rocking?
Their fans aren't very good.
No.
So here's what I'll say about Colorado. It's a hippie town. It's a crunchy town, as mm-hmm. we like to say. There's a lot of there's a lot of tall trees there that like to be hugged from time to time. So you kind of get the idea that the Boulder, Colorado is going to be a bunch of feel good, nice. Nebraska fans are nice.
Yeah.
Colorado fans should be nice. I mean, there's a lot of,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
oh, a lot
yeah
of smoke in the air and yeah, a lot of
right, right
deep thoughts about things.
A lot of love,
things.
A lot of, yeah.
But they are probably, and maybe it's just to Nebraska, the worst people that we've
there's been horror stories of guys. You have to change your, I mean, there's been stories of people having to change their license plate so their car doesn't get crushed, basically.
Couple of quick stories. 2001, the year that we got beat, was it
76 to whatever?
No, 62 to 48. That was the Crouches, the year we ended up going to the Orange Bowl and losing to Miami. And they ended up winning the Big 12 title that year. And we got pummeled. They were trying to fight all of the parents and even some of the players as they were leaving the field after that game. After they beat the heck out of us, their fans were trying to like fight my father and all these like
what?
You wouldn't believe the way that some of these fans treat like the hut, because you know Nebraska, they didn't let you back in the 90s, they wouldn't let you wear red in the
right
on campus or in the buildings, like the football buildings for Colorado. Nebraska was their target. We need to beat Nebraska. Nobody wear red. That's the mindset that they had from back in the day at Colorado. So that's where they became our rival. As soon as it kind of got to the 90s, the Big 12, they were our number one rival. And to them, that's life or death. And they treated us poorly. So 2005, we played there. The student sections were so bad, and they were throwing bottles of, you know, things onto the field.
Well, the urine bombs.
Urine bombs. Yeah. They were doing all this stuff. They got kicked out of the stadium. They took, in the third quarter, probably 20 minutes, stopped the game. They got every kid in the student section kicked out. So, you know, 10,000 fans, we had to wait, and they marched all these fans out.
Wow.
So if people remember, that was the game. We wore the Restore the Order shirts, and that was a big thing that
right
year. And we went up there and beat them pretty good, 30-3. And we went up in the stands in these Restore the Orders, but they were the worst. They were the worst. So it felt so good to beat those guys because their fans treated our fans so poorly every time we'd go to Boulder. And I don't, it's unexplainable like why they're so extra mean to us, but they just were.
That's
so to say this is a hostile place.
That's
I'm going to say, yes, it is. I don't know if it's still as strong as it was
right
when it was Big 12 era. But I'm just telling you, there's no group of fans, and I would probably include Oklahoma fans in there, that dislike Nebraska more than Colorado does.
Right. Yeah, I would say the Oklahoma-Nebraska rivalry was more predicated upon respect in a weird, like there was like more, like there was, Colorado-Nebraska was just like nasty.
It was, and it was, I think it's on Colorado.
Yeah.
They wanted that. That's
right.
Their decision, because we were the big dogs.
So you hope, and that's where it is good that Frost has been a part of that and can get those guys, because that's one thing that'll be interesting. These guys need to get mentally ready. When I say these guys, I mean the players, to go into that sort of situation. I mean, because you got to be, it takes a special mindset in those spots. Do you feel like, is there any key to that for you? Like, is it just,
I love playing the road. I mean,
I'm with you. I almost enjoyed playing on the road more than home.
Going and taking somebody's heart on the road was so pleasurable.
I'd rather make a play and silence a crowd than make a play and erupt a crowd. And I mean that in all sincerity.
I do too. I think there's nothing better than going somewhere.
I even found it easier to focus. Because I thought at home, I thought there were way more distractions at home in college than there was the road. It's like you get on the plane, you go there, you go to the hotel, and you just are immersed in thinking about the game.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. And so, yeah, it just, do you almost think like the emotional component of this game is one of the, like, would you, how high would you put like dealing with the emotion and the environment on, like, if we're doing Beaurud's keys to this game without getting into like the, you know, they on third down, they love to do it, but like the big broad keys, which emotion, like controlling your emotions, dealing with the emotions of the environment?
I don't know if it's that's not something that comes right to top of my head. I think it's, I'm more thinking for
you're more of a, emotions. I've always been more of an intangible guy.
Ask my wife about emotions. She tells me I don't have any. And so,
I always felt it was really, but I also think it's important early in the game to because this, I guess, is a combination of tangible and intangible. Like, Nebraska is going to get off to a good start, I think. Especially fragile nature of, this team still is probably a little their confidence is there, but it's not really there.
So, Nick, I think that's a better word to use than emotions. I mean, emotions are, that's kind of to me all over the place. Confidence is the word I would go with. Playing yourself into feeling really confident about how we are as a team. And to me, that starts with getting off to a good start and not turning the ball over. Right. Those two things will shape the game.
Because, at Michigan, granted, there were so many things with Michigan last year that were just, Nebraska just wasn't ready for that game in every imaginable way possible. But they got off to all the things they had an interception to start the game. It was all the things that can't happen out the gates. Even Oregon a couple years ago with Riley, it was like they were it was like you blinked and you're down 14-0. They need to hang in there early.
Or even Nick, as an example, last year against Colorado, what happened the first 5 minutes of the game?
Yeah, two fumbles. And they hit a flea flicker, long pass, and scored. So within seemingly an instant, Nebraska had two turnovers and was down 14 points.
And then you spend the rest of the game trying to
dig out of that hole.
Dig yourself out and sort of rebuild your momentum. And that's something we don't need to do, especially on the road.
Right. So do you think do you think Frost has he's known for his play calling.
Yeah.
And Saturday just felt like there just was not a lot there. I mean, his homeboy got some stuff.
If I'm a betting man,
I think he's got some looks, some things for Wandale.
I think he held a couple of aces and pocket aces and said, "I fold." And in South Alabama, he ditched in a couple pocket aces. I think we got plays
right.
I think we've got a plan for Colorado because they've been scheming these guys, I'm sure. The first handful of games, you got a really good idea of what you probably want to run, that you've been doing all summer. You have your idea. I mean, obviously, they're going to scout them from the first game, but there's a good chunk of their preparation that's already probably done for Colorado.
I would think. How much does it help that a lot of these guys played Colorado last year? I know it's a different coach.
It's huge.
Yeah, it's got to be huge, right?
Because they're going to, same thing, Colorado has an advantage scouting us as we do them, is that we have a decent idea of their personnel. Some of them, a lot of those guys are going to be coming back.
Right.
And we got to see how our stuff worked and didn't work against them.
So yeah, that's a good point.
What you get to see.
Yeah. I tell you what. A week from today, going to be interesting what we're talking about.
It's going to shape this season.
Because that's how everybody when looking at this season is I get when you see Ohio State's coming to town, you circle that game, you're like, well, big game. This is the game. I don't want to say you lose this game, season's done, but I think it's more of if you win this game, I really think things can kind of.
The potential changes if you win. If you lose this game, I think we know what the ceiling is. Mm-hmm. If we win it, the ceiling goes, it opens up a little bit more.
Yeah. This is going to be a hell of a game.
People need to get ready.
Oh, yeah. I mean, do we miss anything? Do you have anything that you had your notes? Did we not touch on it?
How come you didn't bring notes?
I have a computer. This is the difference. Bo had a physical copy of the paper, handwritten notes. I have something called a computer. Welcome to 2019, Bo. You have a computer too.
I got a computer over here. Yeah.
Is there anything? Because you and I walked in and the first thing I said to you was, don't talk to me. Save it for the pod. Was there anything that you wanted to talk about that?
That was a thorough coverage of the for recapping.
I just think the big thing, there's going to be, you're going to get the sky is falling people because that's the nature of fans at times. Oh, you got to be kidding me. You kid, 24th in the country and they could have lost South Alabama. You're going to get that.
Okay. I got one for you then. Okay. Yep. So tell me your thoughts on this because this was a question somebody asked me yesterday in the parking lot. Having a couple of refreshments, enjoying the victory.
I bet you did.
This came actually from Willie, our buddy Willie.
Yeah.
He asked, how big of a deal is not having Stanley Morgan for Adrian Martinez? How big of a deal is that going to be this season?
It one game in, it appeared like it was a huge deal.
Yeah.
And I think for every quarterback has their guy. That for whatever reason, sometimes it's hard to explain. It's hard to sink your teeth into chemistry. But for whatever reason, the way they run routes works for you. The way they move and look, even like how a guy looks. Like Alex Gordon was, the way Alex looked moving worked for me.
Yeah.
And when you take, like clearly Edelman and Brady, like have a thing. Like where they just, it works.
Yep.
And sometimes it's not necessarily about great how talented you are, you know? So I don't know. I mean, one game in, like it looked like Adrian was searching for comfort.
Bingo.
And I wonder if that was Stanley.
Stanley was the guy that the two things that Stanley was for him was his sort of, it's second and third and long, and we need to throw the ball down the field or over the top.
Mm-hmm.
Who else is he going to? It was Stanley 9 out of 10 times. And that was, you know, when he asked me that, I started thinking it because I wasn't thinking about it up to that point. And I thought, you know what? There might be something in terms of comfort and say, you know, his safety valve. The guy he's going to defer to is like, well, you know what? Guess where it's going?
Yeah,
it's going to go there. I don't really have to think about it.
Clearly, Tommy Armstrong and Westerkamp had something.
It's chemistry. And
yeah.
So we'll see how big of a deal Stanley Morgan not being there is going to be for Adrian Martinez.
Because I think that was one thing that I was thinking about yesterday with like the offense didn't play well. You're like, gosh, could Divino Zigbo and Stanley Morgan not being there make that big of a difference? And Divine, I thought Ozigbo ended up being a pretty darn good player. I mean, he rushed for 1,000 yards.
Yep.
But the Stanley one, especially because you could tell there was Martinez missed Kenawai Noah, the Cal transfer, a couple times.
Yep.
And even he had Wandale open on a post for a touchdown going towards the south end zone.
Yep.
And like if that's Stanley, they just never missed that last year.
They didn't. They hit
never,
it a lot.
They never missed it.
And you know what Stanley was too? He wasn't huge, but he was long.
Yeah.
He was one of those guys that I don't know that we got a guy that's like throw it up high and I can go get it. He was our guy that could do that. So somebody's going to have to fill that role, right? It's sort of like you don't have another Stanley Morgan necessarily, but what two or three guys can sort of fill what he did, right? You know, Wandale's going to take some of that. Spielman's going to be Spielman. He's going to be the same type of guy. But the taller, I'm going to go up and get some high balls. One of those guys has to give us some sort of semblance of that in a deep, like a deep threat.
Right.
And I don't necessarily think of Wandale as a deep threat. I don't think
Spielman's
the deep threat. We need somebody to, you know, take the top off, go over.
I don't know. There are two things. I mean, I thought Stoll looked pretty good yesterday. Like Stoll, and usually have tight ends be a deep threat, but like I think Stoll could be a factor. I think he was one of the more under-talked about guys heading into this year.
He ran pretty good.
He ran really good. And then even little things like
he'd be pulling the plow, and he wasn't.
Let me plow this thing.
Let me pull the plow.
Some of these haircuts, these guys are, I mean.
We got a couple mullets.
We got a couple mullets. Heavy.
A couple
long flowing locks that are just, yeah.
Are we a little jealous though when we see that hair?
Oh man.
We go, one, if I had hair, I'd make it look better than that, but it's just like they got it.
I get offended when I see a great head of hair used, like just gone to waste.
Or like a bad bowl cut and you go, like, really? Like you got it.
Have you seen kids' haircuts these days though? It's like we had horrible haircuts. You would write you wrote like Phoenix Suns in your hair.
Well, that was 90s. So in the 90s, that's what we did.
But you now buzz guys, it. Guys like have like high end tights, perfect, like they're like eight and they have like better haircuts than like I ever had in my entire life.
But I'll give them that. Yeah, you know what?
I guess so.
Having a good haircut. If you don't have hair, every man that's bald or semi bald out there, you know this feeling of
it's bad.
It sucks to not have hair.
When you get, and then getting your hair cut, you just have to stare at yourself at that mirror looking back at you like you're an ugly person. Damn it.
Do your best, Miss Hairstylist. Do your best.
The one last thought on the receiver thing, and then we'll wrap it up. Were they playing zone, a lot of zone coverage yesterday? Could you tell?
They were running a lot of single high, which means they were bringing more people down the box, and they had somebody single high. So that means that they were trying to basically either do it was man or cover three most of the time.
Because another guy that, remember against Wisconsin, who kept on splitting out and running routes and was Maurice Washington. Like, I think Maurice, like, that could be an underrated component even to, like, we think of him only being, like, he's good at screens. And he's good at, against Wisconsin, when they were in man coverage, they'd motion him out and get him one-on-one on a backer or whoever. And he could... I wish I knew the answer to whether or not did George, because Mel Tucker is the Georgia coach, came from Georgia. They probably play man. I don't know.
I'm trying to even remember last year what they were doing a lot of.
Well, it's a new coach.
Oh,
so,
new coach.
Yeah, it's a new and so.
I don't know.
I just think even Maurice was an op. Like he got to where he was pretty good at catching the ball.
Well, I don't know what it's going to look like, but I'm excited to see sort of how they use Maurice and Wandale on the field at the same time, because you've got two guys that can kind of be like your hybrid running backs, and then two guys that are, I mean, Wandale for sure, he's like a receiver, but Maurice is also, so you got two
Maurice
guys.
Maurice can catch the ball and run.
Yeah, like, so you got two guys that are so versatile in their skill sets. If you can get them on the field at the same time, that's something, that's a tough matchup for a defensive coach to kind of go, how do you want to approach guarding these guys?
Well, think there could be times where it's like you have Martinez, Maurice, and Wandale, and Spielman, then in like the slot or something. Like, and Spielman can run, you know, you can do different things with Spielman. Like, Spielman's versatile as well. Like, they have three guys, but in particular, those two, Wandale and Maurice Washington, like, are, and that's what I'm just, that's why I really, I think we're going to, I think in the first series of the game on Saturday, you're going to see formations and personnel packages that you probably didn't see. I mean, think Maurice didn't even play in the first half of this game.
So that will be interesting. So I think that will answer our question on, were we holding back? Were we intentionally vanilla? Is if that first, you know, the first scripted, whatever,
right,
15 plays, are we're
different
doing some things.
Like, whoa, what is
right?
that?
That's, and if you see some gadgets, you see some special, that either tells you one of two things, that they were intentionally vanilla, or it's like they said, well, we need to spice it up a little bit. So
right.
We'll see. Time will tell.
Oh man. I can't wait a week from today to be recapping this thing. This is going to be the emotion of this. I think it's Fox's big crew. It's Gus Johnson, Joel Klatt. It's Saturday afternoon. It's going to be like, this feels like the opportunity for like a big moment for Nebraska to kind of go on the road, win in a hostile environment, get some confidence.
Yeah.
Put this South Alabama game behind you, you know, and I mean, even because even like, now granted, it's not against teams like South Alabama. Every team not named Bama and Clemson, like lots of teams look back on a game where it's like, how the hell that didn't play good today. Could you, how did we win that game? Like, that's kind of a part of how seasons go.
Yeah.
You gotta find, it's hard to bring your A game every Saturday.
For sure.
And so, the mark of teams that ultimately go places is like, what happens when you don't have your A game? And can you win? And Nebraska didn't have their A game offensively, and they won. So
they might have their D minus game.
That was
and
about
won.
As, but man, it just, again, like a new center, high snaps, vanilla play calling. You had a new JUCO running back, who then you change running backs and centers at halftime. You had a like there just there was a lot of things that were that ingredients for things to maybe be a little choppy, and they were choppy. I'm just not. I think Martinez. He'll be fine. He'll be totally.
If you believe in Adrian Martinez, you're not worried.
Come on. Yeah. Okay, so we hit all your notes. I'm pointing at you. Are we good? You had the one question from our friend Willie over beers in the parking lot. How could you forget the one question from the tailgate parking lot with beers with one of our friends? How could you forget that?
You can't.
You can't forget that.
When it's that good. Yeah. So, no, I think it's good. This has been tons of fun. So,
let's get ready for next
week. What's your, I got to learn the plugs. How do you do the plugs?
So, download, subscribe, rate, and review. Download, subscribe, rate, and review.
Download, subscribe, rate, and review the Nick Baugh podcast. We're climbing the charts.
We're climbing it. Yeah, we're
number 30 nationally within the first week. Which Nick, I'm gotta tell you, I'm really impressed.
I didn't know what you when we launched this thing. We didn't know what. Like, what do you think? What you talked to me before the week? And I was like, I honestly don't know.
Well,
I don't know.
It's been the response that I've gotten has been pretty remarkable. I mean, there's a lot of the people are people we know, but the people that we haven't know, like that we don't know that are talking about your podcast, it's pretty awesome to see how excited people are and how many people are tuning.
It's been the launch week was so cool. I didn't know what to expect, and it's exceeded my expectations.
Yeah.
And so this is cool. I'm and again, we're just getting started.
Yeah. So
tell your friends to tell a friend to tell a friend to download, subscribe, rate, and review.
Download, subscribe, rate, review. Okay. I got
that. Have to do. Download, subscribe, rate, and review.
Love it.
That's what you gotta do. Okay, so till next week, Bo.
Thanks. Give me a shake.
A hearty handshake.
There we go.
All right, there you go. Production.